You are listening to Women's Running Stories.
Hi, my name is Michelle Wheeler. I am a professional wheelchair athlete. I travel around the world doing marathons, currently training for the 2024 Paralympics event in Paris. And besides being a professional athlete, I am also a clinical rehabilitation and mental health counselor, doing a full-time role there. And then I'm also a mother and just enjoying the journey.
Yes, this episode features the story of professional wheelchair racer Michelle Wheeler, an internationally competitive marathon racer who will, this year, also be returning to shorter distance racing on the track, going after her Paralympic dreams. But before we hear more from Michelle, I want to welcome you to Women's Running Stories. I am Cherie Louise Turner. I am your host and producer. And this podcast is a proud member of the Evergreen Network of Podcasts. And before we get going here, I want to highlight a brand that I love, and that is Wazelle. Wazelle is a by women, for women apparel company that is rooted in running. They make fantastic clothes. I have been running in Wazelle for years, and the clothes fit well, they last, they look great, and they are comfortable. Wazelle has a threefold mission, and that is to make a great product, which they do, to improve the sport, which they also do, and to build the sisterhood. And they do that in such an authentic way. I love what Wazelle does, I love what they make, and I encourage you to check them out. They are at wazelle.com, and that is OISELLE.com. I also want to mention that this episode is made possible with help from the Black Unicorn Marathoners. And once again, I want to give a special shout out here to Adrian Benton, Alexandria Williams, and Rochelle Solomon. And Rochelle was featured on the podcast a few years back. She was part of our Roads to Boston series, and you can hear her story in that series. I will link to it in the show notes. So, yes, thank you to these women and the Black Unicorn Marathoners. The Black Unicorn Marathoners is an organization that celebrates and connects Black marathoners who are or have been in the Boston Marathon. And this year, they are hosting their 10th annual Celebrate and Connect event on Marathon Weekend. And that will be Saturday, April 13th from 2 to 7 p.m., at the Reggie Lewis Track and Athletic Center. And you can learn more at blackunicornmarathoners.org, which I will link to in the show notes. I do hope to see you there. It is a great event. And yes, I will be there to help celebrate these runners. And the very next day, I am once again joining my friends Lisa and Julie of the Run Farther and Faster podcast to co-host a panel at the Boston Marathon Expo. We will be on the live stage Sunday, April 14th at 2 p.m., and we're hosting a panel called Making a Statement, Breaking Barriers in Women's Running. And we will be in conversation with elite runners Kelly Bruno, Elisa Harvey, and Bree Bomer. Each of these outstanding women runners has broken barriers in women's running that inspire them to compete with a purpose that goes beyond race day. It is going to be a great conversation, and immediately following the panel discussion, the Black Unicorn Marathoners will present the exceptional athletes running as a part of Team Bevins at this year's Boston Marathon. And that team includes Michelle Wheeler, as well as Jen Kanyugi, who was featured in last week's Women's Running Stories episode. So you can meet both Jen and Michelle at that event. The women of Team Bevins are running in honor of trailblazer Marilyn Bevins, the first Black American woman to finish the marathon in under 3 hours. And that is just one of the many accolades of Bevins, who was one of the top marathoners of her day. And Marilyn Bevins will be there at the presentation. Also to mention, Team Bevins is supported by Wazell. So yeah, there is a lot going on there, and it is going to be a great event. So please come join us Sunday, April 14th at 2 p.m. on the live stage at the Boston Marathon Expo. All right, now let's get into this episode. Michelle Wheeler has been an athlete since childhood in a number of sports, including wheelchair racing. And her early focus was on the track in sprinting events. Back then, she had no interest in anything longer than those short bursts of speed, the 100, the 200, the 400 meters. That was it. As she entered adulthood, Michelle's focus shifted to other parts of life. She became a mom, she moved from her childhood home in New Jersey to New York City, and she earned her bachelor's degree. Competitive wheelchair racing wasn't top of mind. But as it would turn out, fate stepped in to change that. And today, Michelle is among the best, racing alongside women who were motivation for this journey, including U.S. Paralympians Tatiana McFadden and Amanda McGrory. Now racing in the pro field, Michelle earns invitations to compete in top events all over the world. And to be clear here, professional invitations come with support, including travel expenses. Last year saw Michelle race marathons in Boston, Berlin, Sydney, London, Chicago, New York, and Philadelphia, in addition to traveling to shorter races. But it hasn't always been this way, of course. Getting to this level has been a process years in the making, and that is exactly what this story is all about. How Michelle Wheeler went from thinking her most competitive days of wheelchair racing were behind her to where she is today. Looking ahead to another full year of professional marathon and road racing, and going after her Paralympic dreams. For that, she will be back on the track, focusing on the 800, 1500, and 5000 meter events. She's going after meeting Olympic standard qualifying times and earning her spot on the team. She has a big season ahead. All right, so let's get into this story. And to start us off, we're going back to the time after college, after Michelle and her then 3-year-old daughter had returned from New York City to New Jersey to make plans for what came next. Here to tell the story is Michelle Wheeler.
You know, being at home in Jersey, I was back into a place that was familiar for me. You know, my family was there. I grew up playing sports there, you know, going to Philadelphia, doing all the water sports and hand cycling and things like that. So I just began to get back into it, not just for myself, but also for my daughter. I felt like I kind of ran away from it all, I think, just, you know, being young and with a disability and facing all the different types of microaggressions and things like that, I think I was just trying to be as normal as possible, if that makes sense, and running away from who I truly was. But I decided that I wanted to kind of get back to myself because that's where I was most happy. You know, I was most happy doing any and all sports and I was great at it. And, you know, I also wanted my daughter to be athletic and see me in these different roles and be around different people and to really kind of help maybe remove some of those barriers and stereotypes that, you know, that are out there that we see all the time. So getting back to, you know, New Jersey, kind of getting back into a racing chair. At that time, I didn't even have a racing chair. I was using my sister's, which was entirely too small. but I didn't care. You know, I was happy just being there with my daughter on her bike and, you know, seeing her smiling and having fun and just enjoying just being outside and pushing again. And a woman approached me from Penn State and was like, hey, do you want to train for Rio? I was like, I don't know, you know, and I sat on that. I sat on that for a few months, actually. I was like, no, there's no way I could do this. I was working this full-time job. But then the opportunity arose for me to go back to school and get my master's degree. And I'm like, you know, that's even more of the direction I want, you know, for my career anyway. You know, if I can get another degree and start my career, then that's what I wanted to do. And the plus side would be to compete. You know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to be where I would want to be at on the elite level, but that was, you know, just a plus. And so I took a risk. I quit my job and I moved us to Penn State. And it was, you know, new everything, you know, far from my family, far from everything that I knew. I just kind of put my trust into the university and into this coach to hopefully, you know, start that process. You know, I've done it before. I grew up racing. I started racing when I was 10 years old, you know, and at that time I started doing sprinting, right? So I was doing the 100, the 200, the 400. Like, I love sprinting. I was good at it. I was fast. And I hated long distance, actually, which is really interesting. Like, I could not stand training for long distance. 1500, 800, I hated it. And I think that changed when I started doing long distances for fun, right? It didn't feel like work. You know, I enjoyed, you know, I would go to Philly and go over to West River Drive and, you know, I would do the loop. So that's 6 miles. And then I would do that twice, you know, and I felt great, you know? And so I'm like, you know, I could probably do this. No, you know, obviously not knowing then how much work truly goes into training for long distances. I had no clue. I was very, very positive thinking about that. And I should have been more realistic. And so when I first started with Penn State, initially the goal was, you know, I wanted to get back with, you know, I grew up with Tatiana McFadden and Amanda McGurry. You know, those are people that I raced with, you know, they were my friends. And so I wanted to get back there and, you know, be on the same race line with them. And so the goal was, okay, I'm going to do a marathon. You know, again, no clue how that actually looked and how that would work and how possible it would be. But that was my goal. And I gave my coach a list of goals that I wanted to do. I want to go to Paralympics. I want to race marathons. And I want to be number one. You know, that's what I want to do. And so we began that, you know, we started that journey. You know, the first year was rough, obviously, because I hadn't been training. I had these huge goals. I mean, I'm very competitive. So I had these huge goals in mind for myself. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to make the team. It's going to be great. Yeah, I was far from that, right? It took me a few years to get on the map. So those first 2 years was just really just training and trying to pave a way for myself into getting to marathons and making it to that level. I was not, you know, an elite level athlete. I wasn't invited. I had to pay my own way through, which, you know, is typical. Trying to figure out how to be the best parent with balancing, you know, a full-time job. I was training full-time, going to school full-time. It was a lot. So I was just really just trying to figure out how to do it all and be my best at it. You know, it's really interesting. So my Penn State coach, I felt like we were really learning a lot together from each other and from the sport. I actually battled a lot of injury and things like that throughout my time with Penn State because it was definitely a lot of learning and growing and trying to figure out, you know, what my body could do with the resources that I had. At that point, we were training to do all the races, you know, because I was doing sprint. At that time, I was sprint events, you know, the 100, the 200, 400, the 800. I was doing all the events. And so it was challenging. To put it in a nutshell, it was challenging because I was trying to do everything when looking back at it now that my body was not ready to do all that coming back into sport, which hence, I think a lot of the injuries and things like that, I really should have probably focus on a certain distance, like the 5,000 or 1,500, versus trying to do it all. So I had to really put things into perspective and be a little bit more realistic in what I could do. But it was still good, you know. I needed to have that coaching. I needed to have that learning. Just I needed to have that particular moment for myself to see what I needed to do in the future.
So yes, Michelle was doing it all. The track, and the longer distance road races, and while trying to do everything did take its toll, Michelle was making great progress, and by her third season, she was racing stronger than ever.
Now we're talking about 2018. I really started to get better, and I won LA Marathon, and then I got invited to be on the Marathon World Championships team for London. You know, so it was a slow but gradual build for myself.
Yeah.
And I discovered that, like, it was hard, but I actually really loved it. Like, I couldn't see myself doing anything else. It's really kind of one of those things where you don't know until you're doing it, like, this is good. Like, I can do this. You know, initially when I started doing marathons, I had no idea, even just a professional athlete, I had no idea all of what it came with. I knew I wanted it, I knew I craved it, I knew I needed it, but I had no idea what the sacrifices were. And remind you, you know, then I was a full-time student in a very rigorous grad program, you know, for counseling. You know, you're giving everything there, mentally, physically, like you're giving everything to be so you can be the best, you know, therapist in the future. And my daughter was a preteen at that point, going through school, really battling a system, just really battling in school and trying to figure out who she was, trying to figure out where she fit in this world as a young child, you know, middle schooler. And then me traveling a lot, I was everywhere. And I felt like I was being a terrible mom because I would miss these moments or, you know, she was having a hard time. She would take it out on me. And we were just trying to learn together through it all. And, you know, it's always been something I'm very, very, we communicate very well together. We're like, she's my best friend. She's my everything, you know? So I always say to her, like, hey, listen, if this is too much or you need me or what's going on, I can stop. You know, this is not my life. I can stop, you know, we can figure this out together. And, you know, the pandemic, prior to the pandemic, you know, I felt like I was burnt out, I think, a lot from grad school, you know, preparing my thesis and, you know, in clinical, you know, and that mentally I was drained there. You know, trying to make sure I'm getting I was working out twice per day then, trying to make sure I'm getting both workouts in, trying to make sure I'm helping her with her stuff. I didn't ask for help. I'm not one of those people that ask for help. And I think that's what hurt me a lot too. I didn't rely on anyone. I was relying on myself. And my best friends were stepping in and help where they could. And I just hit this strong woman syndrome that some of us have, right? I didn't know how to put that down to say, hey, I need help, or hey, this is not working, to feel like I was failing, right? I didn't want to fail at anything I was doing. I wanted to show the world that I could do it, but I never talked about the downside of it or like the sacrifices that come with that. I came in wanting to do anything and everything and not really having a true balance to anything, right? Like I burned out very quickly back then versus now, very quickly. You know, after 2018, I was burned out. 2019, it was a mess. And then the pandemic hit. And so I think when the pandemic hit, it was a blessing in some ways for our family, because we got to kind of sit and be with ourselves and not have the pressures of the world on us. But then sitting, I began to wonder who I was without it, you know, like who am I without sport? Who am I without doing what I love to do? So it was really, you know, that blessing began to turn into like, okay, I need to get back to this. I need to be doing something. So coming out of the pandemic and, you know, I think I was training on my own at this point because I didn't have a coach. So I was without a coach for a year, I believe, about a year after I had graduated. And so I think just trying to remember, you know, what I should be doing and going out and doing it on my own, I began to feel a little better. You know, I began to feel like, okay, I enjoy this again. This is why these are the parts that I love to do. And I think it helped me mentally as well, in some sense, you know, just being active and going out on my own time and making, you know, and not having to stick to an actual schedule. That was really helpful for me then.
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age, because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run, where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.
But then come, you know, getting back into racing again, I begin to have these thoughts of like, oh crap, like I actually haven't been training the way I probably should be training to get back to the elite level again and to race and be competitive against my friends and competitors and things like that. And so that began to wail me mentally, right? I'm probably my own worst critic, honestly. I'm my own worst enemy when it comes to being an athlete, being a mom, you know, being in my career. I'm my own worst enemy. And I think all those thoughts of like, well, they're all gonna be better than me and I'm not gonna do well. And all these different thoughts kind of rushed in and it made me very anxious. I really struggled with anxiety, especially around that time. I was sabotaging myself in some ways, you know, and it really took a lot of work to just say, you know, hey, I'm gonna go and do this and just see how I do and not try to compare myself. And that's kind of where it started, just kind of gradually getting back into it and saying, hey, you know what? I'm okay with this. You know what? This is fine. This is where I'm at right now. And I think having that mentality about that really, really helped me. And then I got, you know, I got back into the shape I needed to be in and things started picking up again. And I just felt like, okay, this is back to life. And then I met my new coach, Santiago Sanz. He's a former Paralympian himself. He's a quad and he's just really incredible. He's a really incredible person and an incredible athlete. I really appreciate him because while he is amazing at what he does and really focused on the athletic, on the, you know, the clinical side of, you know, how things work with your muscles and things like that and all the different mechanics. I appreciate that. But what I really love is that he focused on my mental. And we had conversations like, hey, I'm burnt out or hey, I'm struggling, you know, and we could figure out how that worked to still get the workout in, but just kind of talk myself through some of those negative feelings that I was having, you know. And so, you know, having that conversation with him, even still now, you know, I get like that. And but it's really helpful to have teammates and have a coach that really responds to that. And it's not a negative thing at all. So I think that really helped me just kind of get back into it. And obviously, you know, my team, my competitors, we're all friends and just talking with them and how they're doing and seeing that it really impacted all of us in these different ways was really helpful to say, hey, I'm not alone. And it's okay, you know, and maybe it's not this year, maybe it's next year, you know, and just kind of setting those little goals like that for myself really helped change my mindset about racing, like completely. Instead of feeling I had to do it or like I had to be great or I wasn't going to be invited or I wasn't going to do this. Instead of having that mindset, I was able to say, hey, like, I really love this. And I love how I feel when I do this. You know, I love the people that I meet that are inspired and want to do this themselves, you know? So I really changed that thinking a lot to say like, okay, what are the plus sides of, you know, what am I getting out of this that is rewarding for me? I've been trying to make it a point more and more to talk about the mental health side because no one talks about the mental health of racing and anxiety and the imposter syndrome and all those. No one really discusses, like, you're not going to be great all the time. And, you know, the other part of this, people see you on TV and think, oh, yeah, this is amazing. You're great, you know, and you were awesome. And then when you don't do well, they're like, oh, what happened that day? Right? Like, that messes with your mental so bad. And, like, we're not robots.
This element of mental health is an important aspect of Michelle's athletic preparation. And tied into that is finding the right balance with racing and the rest of life. It's an always changing ebb and flow that she and her coach navigate together.
You know, just with my coach, like, it just, he gives me the choice. Like, he's not upset. Like, you know, he's a good coach, you know. He's done amazing things in his life. And I feel like even then, so he's like, it's your choice. Like, you know, it's not pressuring you either way. Like, if you feel you're not ready to do this, we're not do it, you know? And, you know, we'll talk about the training and the different things that are going into it. And he'll give me suggestions of what maybe I can do and things like that. You know, he's got kids of his own. So he relates a lot to a lot of the challenges that I have there. And he's like, hey, listen, if you can't get the work on this morning, try to get it out, get it done this evening. Right. You know, so like, and he knows I work a full time job. So it's like, hey, coach, I'm just not available right now, but I'll do this later. You know, so we try to create a plan to where there's some balance. Right. It's doable. Just definitely you can do it. But you have to have a balance. You have to, or you're going to hate it. You know, you're going to hate yourself. You're going to hate what you're doing. Right. You're going to be miserable. And so that was for me. Like, I had to find a balance that made sense and really determine what that balance actually look like, right? So, you know, for me, it's like, for instance, I need to make sure that if I'm not up at this, you know, I would say like 6:30. If I'm not up at 6:30 to go train, then if I feel too tired, then I need to make sure that I am done work by 2 p.m. to go out and, you know, get that workout in, right? You know, I need to, things like that. Or I know on the weekend, like, it's going to be busy sometimes. I got a meal prep. What can I do throughout the week to make sure to make my life a little bit easier for myself? You know, what fun things can I do with my daughter to kind of incorporate into my training? You know, what can we talk about together that kind of helps this, you know, help our normal routine, things like that. Just little things and just, you know, trying to put a time interval into what I'm doing as well. Doesn't have to be like a hard set in stone, but in general, like, hey, I'm gonna take 20 minutes out to go get my stretching in real quick between this phone call with my client, and then I'm gonna come back to work, you know, like things like that. And so really just having a better balance and being consistent, you know, that would be my biggest thing, is like staying consistent with the training, staying consistent with the goals in mind. And, you know, our weekly or bi-weekly chats, or just texting him randomly, like hey, coach, they felt good. You know, talking with my teammates and us talking like, oh, yeah, I get that, too. Like, oh, how did you go? You know, what did you do differently? You know, and just having someone else to kind of to share that weight with, you know, that can relate is helpful, has always been helpful. Or talking with my friends, you know, in Illinois or across the world in Australia, you know, like, hey, like, this is what I'm going through. Do you experience this, too? You know, and so having those conversations with people that can relate, it's just been really, really huge this past, like, I would say these past 2 years.
And during these past few years, Michelle Wheeler has focused specifically on the marathon and other long-distance road racing. And she's worked with her coach to create a balance that allows her to be consistent with her training and have a full life outside of racing. And she has continued to progress through the sport. This year will look a little different in that she is adding those shorter distance track races back into the mix, going after her Paralympic dreams. And this is in addition to her full schedule of travel to compete in marathons and other road races. Yeah, it is going to be a big year. And especially now, as Michelle is coming out of a couple months of downtime, her off season, she'll continue to focus on the mental side of her preparation.
I always feel like for me, the times I get most down on myself or worry about the journey or the process is off season. Because, While it's good to have that rest and you need it, right? Your body needs to recover. You need to kind of get just recharged again, right? It's excellent. But I think as it gets closer and closer approaching to the competition season, it's hard because like you haven't had anyone for these last two months to race against, you know? So you don't know where you compare against someone now. So like that anxiety begins to form all over again, like, oh my God, like, am I ready? Or am I in shape? Or like, am I doing anything? You know, so like, that's probably one of the most challenging time for myself. But I also try to use that time as well to catch up on life. Like I'm telling you, off season this year was amazing because I had time to like fold my laundry. You know, I had time to like get things done around the house and, go different places and things like that and really just, be a regular person. And so I think remembering things like that and like just kind of getting to a normal flow routine really helps me with some of that, some of those negative thoughts. And, I am so excited for this season. I've really had a lot of great training throughout the past year, really kind of building up, staying consistent with it. I feel strong. I got a new racing chair. It's a little bit different measurements than before. So I'm excited to see how that goes. Really looking forward to going to trials, some other track events, just to see if I can hit those times and hopefully make my mark this year. You know, it's always been a goal of mine, a dream to achieve. You know, we have a very competitive, really amazing field. There's always going to be that, but you just got to believe in yourself, right? And, others believe in me. So it's just a matter of keeping that belief in myself, even throughout the challenging times. But I'm really looking forward to it. Another full race season. We're going to be everywhere this year. So my goal is just really to stay mentally strong, physically fit, stay consistent, and really just enjoy the ride. You know, just thinking from where I was then and am now, I've made significant changes and improvements. So I'm happy. I can't wait. You grow and mature, right? And you learn throughout the years of like what's important in racing and what is important in the work that you're doing as an athlete and things like that. And as I've been in the sport, I've learned and seen things and, try to help change some of the barriers that are still there and things like that. And so having some practice with that makes me a better athlete, but also I think a better person to help some of the youth coming up or just someone who wants to join into sport, doing a lot of advocacy work and things like that and talking with the race directors and things like that, right? Really having conversation of what's going on and what's working and what's not working. And then also my daughter is very competitive. She's really good at track and seeing the kind of things that she's going through. And so just taking a step back and, stressing the importance of the fun of this, right? It really is fun. Like you need to enjoy what you're doing. And I don't hound her, it's one of those things where I could totally coach her, but it's she's not going to enjoy it, right? She's going to burn out. And that's not the message that I'm trying to send across. If you enjoy it, you love to do it, let's do it. Right. But also you got to, one thing I do say is you got to commit as well, right? You don't want to half-ass something, right? You need to make sure if you want to do it, you're going to do it. So it's just teaching the importance of consistency and things like that. And even with myself, just being a little bit more kinder to myself, kinder with the process and thinking about what I would tell someone else that's going through this and, talking with, I have, like I said, my competitors are my friends and we have conversations and, we all go through different things. So thinking about what I would tell them and making sure I'm, true to myself and saying it to myself as well, because it's important, and it's true. So I think that has really helped me be a better athlete. I have a better balance of my overall life. Still working on it, obviously. It's always a process because things are always changing. But, I have a better balance in my life and making sure that I'm giving time to myself to relax and not trying to do everything every day. you know, eating better and understanding the mechanics of eating and what that looks like and why it's important that I'm doing what I'm doing. Because I think before I was just like, oh, I got to do, I didn't understand, why I was doing what I was doing. Like, why is it so important to eat protein, you know? How much protein do I need? Am I eating? Am I overeating? Am I undereating? Like, what does that look like? Like, why am I doing all this? You know, and so kind of understanding the whys around a lot of what I'm doing, a lot of the training, even the whys of my own work in my job, quite frankly, you know, like learning those different pieces has really helped me get a better grasp of my overall life. So yeah, a lot of different components have just really helped shape me. And I think as I continue to grow, next year will be an even better year, you know? So just that journey and just getting comfortable and accepting that journey for what it is. And not trying to jump to the next thing too soon, you know, just kind of being happy where I'm at.
Being happy where you're at. Great words to live by. And that does bring us to the end of Michelle Wheeler's story on the podcast. Thank you so much, Michelle, for coming on the podcast and sharing your story. I wish you all the best at the Boston Marathon, the Paralympic trials, all of it. I am so excited to cheer you on. Michelle did just start her 2024 season on March 17th, racing the New York City Half Marathon. There she placed an excellent fourth, and she said she felt strong. A great launch to the year. And I am excited to meet Michelle Wheeler in person over Boston Marathon weekend, and you can join me. As a reminder, Michelle will be at the Boston Marathon Expo on the live stage as part of Team Bevins Sunday, April 14th, immediately following the panel discussion that I am co-hosting with my friends Julie and Lisa of the Run Farther and Faster podcast. And that panel features Bree Bomer, Elisa Harvey, and Kelly Bruno. It starts at 2 p.m. And yes, Team Bevins will be presented immediately after that, and Michelle will be there as part of that team. And I will link to that information in the show notes. I will also link to the Black Unicorn Marathoners event, which is happening on Saturday. And look to the show notes for how you can keep up with Michelle Wheeler on social media. Join me in following all of her racing this big year of competition and beyond. I want to thank you so much for being here and listening. I love making these episodes, but the power of them always lies in you listening and also in you sharing. I always appreciate you sharing the podcast with other people who you believe will enjoy it as well. And that does bring me to the end of this episode. I am Cherie Louise Turner. I am the host and producer of Women's Running Stories. And until next week, I wish you healthy, joyful strides forward. Women's Running. Running stories.
Hear Her Sports is a podcast for everyone who loves stories by and about women striving to improve and make a difference in their lives. I am your host, Elizabeth Emery, a former professional cyclist. In every episode, I introduce a female athlete or woman in the business of sport through a thoughtful conversation about who they are and the terrific work they're doing. My guests and I explore the glorious and frustrating issues in sports, history, equity, training, nutrition, and so much more. Join us for inspiration, for community, and for love of being a strong athletic woman.